Coming up on today's show.
Mickey got the call a couple months before the Super Bowl was about to happen, and when they asked me to come up with the arrangement and stuff, I was like, oh my gosh, this song means so much. But I grew up in Canada and I didn't grow up singing the American anthem. I grew up singing the Canadian anthem, so I had to learn it.
Pictures of my mama hanging on the wall. She's never looked so happy, and I've never looked so small.
Happy New Year! Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville, my guest is a multi-instrumentalist, producer, and multi-genre songwriter. She produced the majority of Mickey Guyton's three-time Grammy-nominated album Remember Her Name and is a co-writer on several of the album's tracks. My guest arranged the instrumentation and choir and played piano in the final performance of Mickey's performance of the Star Spangled Banner in early 2022 at the Super Bowl. She has also accompanied Mickey on stage for many special occasions, including performances on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, the 2021 American Music Awards, and the 2021 Grammy Awards. Her resume includes writing, co-writing, or producer credits on a long list of songs that have charted and or been gold certified, including in the US, Canada, and Australia, and she has had several songs placed into motion pictures. You've been hearing the Mickey Guyton song, Scary Love, which my guest produced and was a writer on. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Karen Kozowski.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you for finding time in your schedule to talk with me. I've been looking forward to this.
Me too.
Let's get started with having you share all about the Mickey Guyton song that was just playing called Scary Love and your work on that track.
Sure. I mean, this is one of my favorite tracks we did for the record. You know, it really started from the writing session where, you know, Mickey came in and we were writing with two friends of ours, Victoria Banks and Emily. And we were talking about, well, this was an early write for Mickey's record, so I feel like we were just trying to figure out where she wanted to go direction-wise as a concept, totally for the record itself. Mm. And, you know, she, over the course of the last record, she became a mother. And so this was something that she hadn't really delved into yet in her songwriting. And so Mickey became a mother in the last couple of years. And so did our friend Emily, who we were writing with. And our friend Victoria Banks also has two little girls. So the three of them were really kind of like, you know, talking about their experiences being moms and really connecting on that. And I, you know, I was looking around at all my guitars going, my little babies. I can hang with it. you know, I would never compare that. Guitars are temperamental, but I would never compare the responsibilities of looking after a guitar.
And by the way, right now the dog and cat owners in the audience are going, I get it too. I get it too. I'm a dog mom. I'm a cat mom.
Totally, right? So anyways, yeah, we ended up writing this song about, you know, I mean, really try to capture that feeling of how when you have a child, your life completely changes. And it's the kind of love that you feel for that child is, I mean, it's so many beautiful things, but it's also terrifying because, you know, suddenly you feel like you're living for so much more than yourself. And you have this huge responsibility that I can only imagine that, you know, Emily and Victoria and Mickey were all, you know, feeling. And the line Mickey sings in verse two, which is like, driving to the store ain't just driving to the store anymore. You don't want to imagine because anything could happen.
Wow.
And it's like, ugh. You know? So we all were really connecting with that feeling of just like, gosh, that's terrifying, but it's a beautiful, but it's a scary love. And so we wrote Scary Love.
What a cool hook. And I'm glad that we had the opportunity for you to talk about it, because that's one of those titles that people could look at and completely misinterpret as to what they assume the song is probably about. So that's why I love getting the guest to talk about the songs when we start off each show each week. While we are talking about a song of hers, let's get into working with Mickey Guyton, how the two of you met and how y'all got to collaborate. Plus, tell us what it was like producing the majority of Mickey's three-time Grammy-nominated album, and then most recently creating writing on her newest album.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mickey and I have been working together for several years now. Shortly after getting done to Nashville, I had been doing some writing with my friend Victoria Banks, who we wrote Scary Love with, and she and Mickey had written together many times in the past, but I had never been a part of that. And then one day her publisher reached out to me and said, hey, you want to do a write with Victoria and Mickey?
Mm.
And I was actually supposed to be out of town on the date that they had, but I was such a big fan of Mickey. I was like, you know, I'm changing my flight. So I came back early to Nashville, and I mean, obviously I'm really glad I did, because it was, how did I know it was going to be the start of such a long and just really fun, rewarding creative partnership. We just started out writing, really, and feeling like we really clicked together, and wrote a few tunes, and one thing led to another. And yeah, I ended up producing quite a few tracks for her over the years. I mean, most of her record, Remember Her Name, which was really fun because Mickey was really into like just doing whatever she wanted and not kind of like following any rules. You know what I'm saying? She was at a place in her life where she really wanted to like do some things that maybe she felt like she wasn't supposed to do or couldn't do in terms of blending genres and sounds. And so from a production standpoint, for me, that was really exciting because it was like, okay, you know, let's delve into, you know, some stuff that you don't normally hear in country music. Let's try combining some of this. Let's combine her influences. And really, I feel like that continued through into the recent album, the House on Fire record. You know, we're combining all sorts of stuff, you know, everything from Linkin Park to like 90s R&B.
Wow.
Like, it's just, she's got so many diverse influences. And so we're really trying to just make it her sound, make it something unique to her. And that's always super fun to work with, both as a writer and as a producer.
Yeah. And I like that for, gosh, there's so much that you covered in there. But just to go backwards, I'm not implying that as a producer that you do just kind of a wash, rinse, repeat approach. But I think you understand the spirit with which I'm saying when you do have an artist that says, hey, I don't want to just kind of do what we're supposed to do. Like, I want to be really creative and I want to try some things that you're probably not doing with other country artists and that people might kind of scratch their head a little bit. And for you as a producer, I'm sure you're going, yeah, cool. Okay, that's refreshing. Let's have some fun.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, I love, you know, the mainstream radio stuff as much as the next person. And I love writing that stuff too, because it gives me really great feels. But I also love going down some rabbit holes with people who are willing to explore those things and just try to find something that we've just never done before. And it can be a scary thing, because sometimes it's like, you don't know what you're,
yeah,
you're going to end up. Or maybe you'll hate it at the end of it. And you're like, well, that idea didn't work. Now let's try something else. But I mean, that's part of the process, you know, it's the exploration, it's being creative.
And to continue to go in reverse back through what you had said, and this is for anyone in the audience who is an aspiring performer, a young songwriter, anyone that's an up and coming artist, you hear all the time, you never know who might be in the crowd. And in particular, when you're in Nashville, you never know who might be where. And the lesson there is someone gives you an opportunity. The answer is yes. The answer is not, well, I'm going to be out of town that day. Can they do it some? No, they're not going to do it some other day. They're going to do it the day they had it scheduled, and they're just going to get someone else. And so hats off to you, Karen, that you saw that and you said, I want to work with Mickey. I can change my travel plans, because you knew that you never know what's possible in Nashville. And look at where that's gone for the two of you.
100%. You just never know. You just got to say yes.
As our conversation goes along, there's going to be talk of a wide range of folks that you've had the opportunity to work with. And clearly there's a crucial element in all of that, which is gaining an artist's trust. I wonder, how do you accomplish that, Karen?
Yeah, I mean, it's really important. And, you know, it's not unusual for the artists that I see on a regular basis. They're feeling a lot of pressure, you know, from a lot of different places, like how they should sound, how they should look, who should they write with, who should they make a record with, you know, what should that record sound like? I mean, it's, they've got all that coming at them all the time. And I'm not a hard sell style of personality. Like, it just makes me feel kind of like a car salesman. So I kind of prefer to like let the trust and let sort of what we're doing happen organically. Like, let's get to know each other over time. We can both get to know each other and see how we click and develop a creative chemistry. And that's where you really start to build trust. You sort of see, are we on the same page? You know, when I say this idea, does that matter to them? Do they think that's dumb? You know, it's really just a piece by piece process. And I think it gives me a chance to really listen to the artist and dive into their tastes and their influences and their loves and their hates, to really be able to like show up for them and help them make the music that feels most authentic to them. So as you can imagine, like, that's not a quick process. Like, yeah, it's you're going deeper with someone, and usually that happens over time, you know, through, for me, it's usually like a lot of writing sessions, you know, we just getting together on a regular basis and learning to trust each other that way, through trust each other's suggestions and our instincts. And that's when you start gaining that trust. I feel like that's when the magic can really start to happen.
Yeah. And I feel like there's a lesson there again already for the young people who are coming up, that when you are going into a write with someone for the first time, obviously you both have the same goal. You want to come out with a great song, but it's getting to know each other, seeing if there's trust, seeing if there's chemistry. And it's not unlike when an artist goes to meet a producer. You think you're interviewing the producer, but they're interviewing you as much as you are them, because they want to see, is there a nice fit here? Am I comfortable? Can I rely on this person? That's part of trust. And so you're right, Karen. It's not something that's going to happen in the first meeting, but I think recognizing that successful relationships take time, whatever that is, whether it's personal, whether it's songwriter, you name it, it's something that both sides have to work at. And if they see, hey, this is important to Karen, then they're going to do a lot more writing with Karen, a lot more production with Karen, a lot more projects in general.
Yeah, exactly. 100%.
Happy New Year, audience. It is January 1st, 2025, and that means that 2 weeks from today, I will be in Central Florida getting ready for the start of the first of a lot more events you can see me at. I am always eager to meet listeners in person to say a personal thank you for choosing this podcast to spend time with each week. So here are the dates and cities that I have announced so far for being out on the road in this new year. January 16th to the 19th, I will be a speaker at PodFest Multimedia Expo in Orlando. Go to podfestexpo.com for details. It's going to be a quick turnaround, as I will then fly west 2 days later on January 21st to Anaheim, California, where I will once again be attending the NAMM show there. Visit NAMM.org for information on that massive music industry trade show. It's the National Association of Music Merchants, NAMM.org. On Sunday, January 26th, I'm going to drive from Anaheim up to Los Angeles and will be there for parts of 4 days before flying home to Tampa on January 29th. The next week, though, I will fly right back to California again, as I will be a speaker at the 21st Annual San Francisco Writers Conference, which is for writers of literature, meaning books, not music. That is February 6th through the 9th. Check out sfwriters.org for information on that event. If you or someone you know are or will be in any of those places over those dates, get in touch via podcast at nhte.net or DM me through the official at Now Hear This Entertainment Instagram account, and let's meet up. Karen, there are going to be people coming to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment because they are fans, they're followers, they're friends of yours. And by the way, to those people, I say thank you, welcome, and do please check out other episodes of the show. But Karen, since I've been fortunate to get listeners from 166 countries around the world over my almost 11 years of doing this show, there are going to be people just being introduced to you for the first time. It has been quite a journey to where you are now. Can you share your backstory that led you to now being a producer and songwriter in Nashville?
Sure. I grew up in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and I was always super interested in music. I mean, I played piano as a kid. My parents put me through all the classical piano lessons that I could take, and, you know, I soaked up all the bands and choirs and musical theater things that I could do in school as long as I could. So I got like a lot of different like experiences that way. But when I was like a teenager, I started really kind of getting serious about like, hey, I like writing songs. Like I, you know, I just like sitting at my piano or sitting at a guitar and writing stuff. And then I put together a little band, and, you know, my first band, like our bass player had this Tascam multi-track recorder in his basement. So we used to rehearse down there, and we'd track ourselves. And I really got the bug for do-it-yourself recording then, because I was like, wow, like we can record stuff today, and then I can listen to it in my car. And like, what is going on? I mean, this was like a revelation. You know, this is before GarageBand or anything.
It was before GarageBand, and yet you thought, we're living in the future.
I know. I'm dating myself a little bit here. But yeah, like it was so new to me to be able to like just have that real time, record it, and then suddenly I'm listening to like my whole band. And so I got hooked. And I also didn't realize that I could work as just a songwriter or just a producer. So I like all the examples that I was seeing at the time, this was in the late 90s. So I was seeing like, you know, all these explosion of singer-songwriters on the radio and everywhere that I looked. And they were all these songwriters who were going out and performing songs that they had written themselves. So like, I'm talking about like the Sheryl Crows and the Sarah McLachlans and all these people. And it was like, okay, I guess if I like to write songs, maybe I'm supposed to go out and perform them myself. So that's why I started doing an artist project, because I didn't really realize that there were all these other roles behind the scenes, and there's so much more to being an artist than I even realized at the time. I just liked making music, so I started making records for myself, and I liked playing shows. I loved going and doing that, but you know, my real love was always the writing and the recording of the music and being in the studio and figuring out parts and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, down the road, I had moved to Toronto in the early 2000s, and I was, you know, doing still records for myself, but I started getting asked from some friends in the Toronto music community to write a song with them, or, you know, produce a track for them or produce a record for them. And I was like, oh.
Is that why you moved there? Did you move to Toronto just for music?
I moved to Toronto for music, but I didn't move for other artists. I still was kind of thinking that I was the artist at that time. But yeah, it was like, it was the thing that kind of opened my world up, you know, and once I started doing that for other people, I realized that that was what I felt called to, you know? So then I ended up doing that for many years in Toronto, and I was working both with like pop artists and folk artists and starting to get more country artists in the mix. And I started thinking about like, you know, do I always want to stay in Canada? Do I want to think about moving somewhere else? You know, I was kind of starting to find out that like you can have a number one on Canadian radio, Canadian country radio, but no one knows about it outside of Canada. So, you know, and as a songwriter, you always dream about reaching, you know, the world. Who doesn't, you know? So anyways, I started taking trips to like LA and Nashville and London and New York and try to figure out, you know, where I was clicking the most. And Nashville ended up being the place.
Wow. And what year was that you made the move?
2017.
Wow. What a journey. circling back to the discussion we had about getting someone's trust, I'm curious as to if you find yourself co-writing with people for the first time with any degree of regularity, or if it's a pretty tight-knit circle that you stick with, because where I'm going with this is I would love to hear how you usually start a session, meaning your creative process in the writing room, because I assume, by the way, that you're always only co-writing, that you're not doing solo writes anymore.
Yeah. I don't really write by myself that much these days. Well, I mean, basically for me, my writing calendar does sort of have like a variety of like, okay, there's the people that, the artists that are ongoing, like my current, you know, crew that, yeah, we're writing for this record, you know, like Mickey Guyton back in, or Megan Patrick's back in, or any of these people I normally work with. But I am also, like, I'm signed to Sony Publishing in Nashville, and several times a week I'm thrown into a room with total strangers.
Mm.
And I have to create a song about probably the most intimate thing this person can talk about. So some people love it when we just start from scratch, you know, and create something on the spot. And some people love it when I come in, you know, more prepared. So sometimes I'll spend like an evening beforehand, like getting ideas or pulling together sounds or just trying to figure out anything that we could use as like a jumping off point. It's just, it's one of those things where, like, because it's like a blind date on these writes, I have to be able to read the room really quickly and like flip on a dime. And that's a skill I've had to develop. And it's super important. And then you just hope that everything works out and you guys all get a song that you like. I mean, it's always an exploration. It's always throwing spaghetti at the wall. You see what sticks.
But I'm not sure that I'm understanding the procedure, the dynamic, as it relates to you're signed with Sony Publishing. So if they have a write scheduled for you, is it with other Sony writers? Is it with people that are, I don't want to say just off the street, but I'm trying to understand, is there such a thing as, well, Karen's going to be the one that's going to kind of lead the right, so to speak?
I mean, so it's pretty standard, like, that Sony is always kind of introducing me to new artists who are kind of coming up, and especially in the country scene in Nashville, being in Nashville, you know, they're really great for like kind of knowing some of the artists that are starting to, you know, they're getting signed or like looking for the new and up and comers so that they can introduce me as a writer and a producer to these artists and just kind of get a sense of, hey, could this be a great creative collaboration? Mm-hmm. And then there's usually a third person in the room, aside from myself and the artist, who would be considered like your top liner. And they may be someone that I am familiar with already, or they might be someone brand new as well. Mm-hmm. And the top liner is a person who generally specializes in melody and lyrics. So I'm the person that kind of floats. Like, I try to be whatever the room needs in the moment. Like, I can write a traditional song around a piano, around a guitar. I can help write lyrics. I can help write melodies. But sometimes what the room needs is for me to focus even more on like music and even pulling together a few like production ideas that were kind of vibing on a vibe that's not just a guitar.
I see.
It's about finding what's going to inspire the people I'm working with. So I wouldn't say like that one person leads the session or anything like that, but I definitely can help set a tone, especially because they're coming to me to my studio. So, you know.
Well, but I like what you just described because it paints a nice picture of everybody there has something different to contribute. It's not, we're three songwriters who are all doing the same thing. So it does very much fit together. It's, you know, three puzzle pieces that are locked together and create this image of the song that ultimately is going to be born out of that.
Yeah, 100%. It's great if we all realize that we have complementary skills. I mean, those are the best rights when, you know, when everyone feels like they've got something they can contribute and we're all kind of helping each other get there.
Okay, but different from what you just described, then what about when you instead are putting on your producer hat? What is your creative process for producing a track these days? And by the way, does having a couple, two, three other writers on the song help you kind of distance yourself from producing it the way that you might be influenced to if you were the only writer on it. I would think those co-writes of up to three or four people would help you focus on just the producing craft and not think as the person who wrote it.
Sometimes it does. Sometimes in a write, I'm thinking a lot about production because maybe that's what that room needs that day. And having two or three writers in the room with me can help, just so that we're kind of splitting, divvying up like the responsibilities of like, okay, well, we need to figure out, hammer out a verse two, but you know, we also really need this track to be laid down so that we can cut a vocal right away. So I'll go and work on, you know, we already know the roadmap. So I'm going to dig in on just throwing down a guitar part and figuring this out. And as we're going, like I'm hearing what they're talking about. I'm shouting out, I love that lyric. And they're like, you like that guitar part, you know? And so there's a bit of the back and forth, but that's still kind of part of the writing session. Like, obviously, you know, there are some writing sessions where I know that I would be the producer on the track if the track makes it onto someone's record, because I'm already, maybe I already have a relationship with that artist. But there's plenty where I don't know yet if that's going to turn into me producing the track or if I'm going to make a day of demo, and then that artist maybe already is working with a different producer on a bigger part of their project, and so maybe they're going to go and recut it. So like these days there's a lot of different ways that it kind of happens, and the actual like master production can look really different once you get out of the writing room. Like there's so many ways to produce a track in 2024, you know. So for me, you know, once we've written a song, once we've got something that we're liking and it's going to turn into a master, that's a whole other conversation, you know, because I mean, a lot of it also has a lot to do with the budget that I'm afforded to work with.
But I'm thinking of the artist who comes to you that you're not writing with and says, I would love to hire you to be my producer. You have the meeting, everybody's happy. You listen to what they're doing, you start to get that vision. So when it comes to that scenario, what is your creative process for producing a track that is an artist that you've not done any of the writing with?
Well, I mean, I definitely, I'm going to want to sit down with that artist and figure out what their hopes and dreams are for the track. And I mean that in a lot of different ways. Like, I mean that in not only what do you want this track to sound like, you know, do you have a concept for, is this part of a larger project? Is it part of a larger album? You know, is there a scope we need to keep in mind here, a larger scope of things? Or is this a one-off? And you know, what did you have in mind when you were writing it since I wasn't there? You know, like, what are some of the thoughts that you've been thinking of? Do you have any references of other tracks that you like things about them? You know, and then also, again, I try to dig into like, what makes this artist unique? Like, what did they listen to when they were 7 years old? What do they listen to when they're cleaning the house on the weekend and they're not, you know, thinking about work? Like, you know, like, let's just go into some of that too. And then, you know, it also kind of comes down to like, what do I hear in it? You know, trying to, again, like throw some spaghetti at the wall.
Yeah.
And then from there, we kind of start to build a roadmap of like where the track should go. Sometimes the artist even has like a demo that might be pretty fleshed out that would have been made by one of the writers of the song. And in that case, sometimes it's a question of what do we like from this? Is this moving in the right direction? You know, or do we want to use this as an inspiration? Or, you know, sometimes it's like, why don't we try something totally new and see if we can beat this? And, you know, because again, on the day you write the song, you're kind of going with the inspiration, but sometimes when you have a chance to like go back and dig in, you might find something that was even cooler. Nothing against the first one, but you know, when you have time to think about it and time to kind of sleep on it. So it is a cool opportunity to be able to like revisit.
Yeah. Wow. Great stuff. Great stuff. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville by multi-instrumentalist, producer, and multi-genre songwriter Karen Kozowski. Visit her official website at karenkozowski.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. At the bottom of her website, look for social media links to engage with Karen on both Facebook and Instagram. Plus, you will see logos there as well for Spotify and Apple Music, so you can gain access to playlists containing songs that Karen has written and/or produced. Another online destination you should be checking out is the Owl app. That's Owl like the bird, except with two W's and two L's. It is a social networking platform that connects people instantly through private one-on-one audio calls. We have all seen how quickly technology has changed the way that business gets done. And in 2025, you don't want to get left behind because you're solely relying on local in-person networking meetings. Get in touch. Have actual voice calls with people who would be good strategic alliance partners regardless of their location by talking to them through Owl. It doesn't have to be a case of, I already use LinkedIn. Add this to your resources for making new connections. Here's how. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click where it says news and then read the article under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. There are links in there to download Owl for free from the App Store or Google Play. You will also see my invitation code in there. That is a required field as you're setting up the app on your phone. Download it, call me, and let's talk. Karen, before all that, you were talking about your creative process for producing a track, but what we have not discussed is where the magic happens. Tell us about your studio space, the vibe there, and the importance of the studio environment on creativity.
Yeah, I think it's so important. I mean, you want creative people coming into your space to feel inspired and exciting. So I personally believe setting a vibe that feels creative, feels fun, feels safe, it's so integral. I spend a lot of time considering things like lighting, you know, room temperature, furniture, like, how do things feel? Do we need pillows? Do we need candles? Do we need, you know, how do things smell? Has food been cooked recently nearby in the studio kitchen? Do we need to air that out? Like, they're subtle things, but I think they matter. And, you know, so I use colored lighting. I have different lighting scenarios. The vocal booth has its own circuit, so the singer can go into the vocal booth and they've got control over their lighting on the iPad in front of them, so they can like change it to, oh, this song feels more blue, and so the lights are all blue now, or this song feels like a rainbow, so let's do that and let's dim the lamp and let's try to, you know, just get into a space that you're not feeling like you're in a normal, in your normal day. You're like, you're in a creative fun world. And I try to keep like toys around the room, like little fidget spinners. I've got a Rubik's Cube. I've got a rubber chicken slingshot. I've got like a Polaroid camera. And like these things get a lot of use as we're like, especially if we're mulling over lyrics, you know, because a lot of us, you know, we're fidgeters. We like to touch something and break things. So it's, I think it's really important, you know, and I mean, I also think it's important because for listening sessions, even like, you know, I have label people who come, they come to my studio and we break out the bourbon and we have fun listening to stuff. I mean, you know, music is a creative process and it should feel fun. And I never want there to be something that in this space that isn't helping to contribute to like the most fun creative experience we could have.
Well, I have bad news for you. A few weeks ago, I was in Nashville, and I think I visited three different studios. And when I come back, yours is going to be on the list. I've got to see this place now.
Oh, definitely. Let me know when you're coming by again.
Wow.
We'll break out the bourbon for you.
Well, we just finished up the holiday season, but it's worth noting that holiday music is not only a style that you enjoy writing, but that you've had success with, meaning writing and producing. Can you share about that quote-unquote genre and some of what you have done that way?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's just I'm a huge cheese ball when it comes to the holiday. So like I'm big into the nostalgia, you know. My guilty pleasure when the holidays come around is like watching as many movies of the Hallmark and Netflix variety as humanly possible. And so like, yeah, I've had a lot of fun. Like I have a song right now that was just in the Netflix Christmas movie that came out in December called Meet Me Next Christmas. And it's Pentatonix. I wrote it with Pentatonix and was a co-producer on the track. And it was so fun getting to write with them because, I mean, they are like, they are Christmas. Like Pentatonix is in the business of Christmas. They put out so many Christmas records. And when we wrote the song with them, it was just like, oh, it was so fun. And actually, it's funny because we wrote that also with my friend Emily, who I've done a lot of writing with Mickey Guyton and Megan Patrick. And Emily herself released a Christmas song that she and I did years back. We wrote this song back in, like, I don't know, 2015. And it's called It Won't Be Christmas Till You're Here. And she released it herself, and it still gets radio play every Christmas in Canada. It's like a really cool thing. I'll be walking through like the liquor store or something, and I'll hear it when I go back home and visit. I'm just like, what? It's so cool. Wow. So I don't know. I think it's just, I love the cheeseball stuff. I like to make it really nostalgic. There has to be a sleigh bell. It hits you in the feels, you know, like the best music connects you with a time and a place. And I think holiday music can really do that in a way that other stuff can't. So I don't know. I think that's why I connect with it.
I'm going to be surprised if you tell me that you're not one of those people that will say, I know it's June, but we're going to put a Christmas tree up while we're in the studio working on this Christmas song. Is that you or surprisingly no?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
Yes. When we wrote It Won't Be Christmas Till You're Here, we actually got hot cocoa and marshmallows and I have a Santa hat that perpetually lives in the studio now and a little Christmas tree. And like, yeah, because that's what happens, right? Like a lot of people don't realize that when you're writing holiday music, you're writing it in like April.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like the holidays. And so you have to try to like get your brain into that headspace. So like anything you can find to do that and kind of remind yourself of what the feeling is you're going for, it really helps.
And by the way, for the audience, a housekeeping note, when you've heard Karen say the name a few times, I want to make sure you are clear on what she's saying. It's Emma Lee, two separate names. I mean, it's hyphenated, but it's not Emily. So I don't want you to go, she keeps talking about this Emily person. What's Emily's last name? That's her name. It's Emma Lee.
Yes, Emma with a dash. Emma dash Lee. You know, like Madonna.
At the start of the show, we heard about Mickey Guyton, and I'm going to bring her back up one last time in a few minutes. But for now, how about instead Megan Patrick and what it's like working with her, as well as how the two of you met, and for that matter, how it came about writing and producing her latest record, Golden Child, and what the chemistry was like in the studio on that?
Sure. Megan Patrick, she's someone I've known for years. Again, we'd been writing occasionally over a couple years. But I think when we first started writing, we were kind of in very different places in our creative journeys. And it was one of those things, like we just kind of kept coming together and writing. And then one day she came in and just poured her heart out about a personal challenge she was going through.
Whoa.
To myself. And actually our top liner in the room that day was Emily, who we've already mentioned many times. And the three of us, like we talked about it. And this was just such a heavy personal challenge about her mother. And that day we wrote the song Blood from a Stone. And that song really changed something for us. It felt like we were onto something that we were all really excited about. We wanted to keep chasing it. So that's when we started writing more frequently. And then in early 2024, we started talking seriously about like, okay, we need to make this record now. You know, she was loving what I was doing on the demos for the songs we were writing. And she felt like she wanted to, you know, move into like, okay, let's get Karen to produce this record, which is, you know, something that feels great to me because I'm always trying to, you know, find those moments where I can really show an artist that I understand what they're all about. And I felt like we were really getting somewhere with this stuff. So when she felt the same way, it was like really rewarding for me. And so we started tracking the first songs for the album in early 2024. And she's just amazing. I mean, working with her is like, she's got this amazing voice, but she's also a seriously talented songwriter and really cares and goes deep about lyrics. And she's a really smart musician with great ears. So I really felt like working with her, you know, we were just bouncing stuff off each other all the time. And, you know, she's a great hang in the studio. And yeah, it was just, it was really fun, and I'm really proud of what we did together.
Now, Megan is from Ontario, so did you know her when you were living in Canada, and that's how it's translated over to working together in Nashville?
You know, it's funny, but we never wrote together back in Canada. We only started writing together in Nashville.
Huh. Wow. And I thought that that was going to be, when you said we're in different places, in my head I thought, well, yeah, you were in Nashville and she was in Ontario and you're both in Nashville. So I just assumed that at some point you were going to say, yeah, that's where we first met. And, you know, ironically, we both live in Nashville now. So that's interesting that we're both from there. But nope, we weren't doing any music together when we were in Ontario.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I feel like that actually was true for me with several Canadian country artists, because when I was in Toronto, I had access to some Canadian country artists who are more Ontario based. But, you know, there's a lot of artists from Calgary and from Alberta, like the province of Alberta, from Calgary, from Edmonton, from, you know, the west coast of Canada, that they don't necessarily come to Toronto to write, but they do come to Nashville to write. And so I found that I was actually seeing more of my Canadian friends when I was here in Nashville than I ever did in Toronto.
Wow. Interesting. And by the way, I should have mentioned this back at the start of the show in the intro, but Karen actually appeared in episode 5 of Hulu's new country music focused series, It's All Country, hosted by Luke Bryan and Peyton Manning. Karen, that particular episode takes a behind-the-scenes look at a Nashville recording session, and specifically, you producing a track for Mickey Guyton. Tell us about all of that.
Oh, it was so fun to be a part of. We were right in the middle of tracking a lot of tracks for Mickey's album. So we had a tracking day where the cameras came in and got to document the entire process from, you know, the very first listen through with the band, where we're all just out on the live floor and we listen to the rough piano vocal work tape, is what we call it, which is just like a rough version of the song with just a piano and just a vocal, and everyone listens to it and we're all looking at the chart, which is like, you know, a piece of paper with numbers that represent the different chords in the song. So everyone's kind of getting a sense of like the roadmap of what the song's arrangement is and all the different sections, and we're listening through and we talk it over a bit about, you know, the direction we want the sound of the track to go in, and then the band gets onto the floor and starts bringing it to life in real time. And I feel like the way that that happens in Nashville is something so unique and kind of magical. Like, it's such a well-oiled machine, you know, and the players here are so incredibly talented. So the speed with which things can come together is amazing. And, you know, you get to watch as we lay down what's kind of considered the foundational take, which is like, you know, the whole band is playing drums, bass, you know, pedal steel guitars. Maybe one of the players is playing like a banjo. And then once we have done a few takes of that, and then we've got something we're really excited about, then immediately things switch over and some of the players pick up alternate instruments, you know, like the banjo player might pick up a mandolin and the pedal steel player might hop over onto a dobro. And like at the same time, the drummer is picking up percussion instruments and like playing shakers and tambourines.
Which all makes for great television if you're Hulu.
Yeah. And the guitar player is playing like 6 different other parts. And so everything is kind of being layered, and we stop at moments and we like kind of hone certain things in, but it's kind of this cool quintessentially Nashville thing. And it was cool to have the cameras there to capture it. And then, you know, they came to my studio after, which is smaller. I don't have the space to have like a whole band tracking here, but you know, this is where I usually, you know, finish cutting vocals with artists and do other overdubs like that with maybe additional instruments. And so the cameras came in here and kind of took a look at what happened after. You know, and I kind of walked them through the session a little bit, and yeah, it was so cool to be able to show that to people, you know, because I know like we don't always get to see how that stuff's created.
Yeah,
it was really well done. I recommend people check it out.
Yeah, I was gonna say, rest assured, I will be looking for that on Hulu. But I'm curious though, you know, that's happening in the moment. This isn't okay, let's take that over again, or someone forgets their lines. Like, this is, at the end of the day, this is still a real session for Mickey. So was that distracting for you, having production people around that are trying to shoot something for Hulu? Or is it, you know, they understood, they got it, they were out of the way, they kept quiet? Or what was that all like? Because that's something that you're not going to have experience with, of having a whole camera crew in there doing what they need to get done for their production.
There were definitely a few more pauses in the way that, you know, as things go along, we'd have to pause for a second for lighting or this or that. But I mean, we're all professionals. We've all done this a billion times. So it's like, you know, as long as we can stay in the headspace of the song, that wasn't that big a deal for us. And honestly, the crew was so experienced at, you know, like documenting, like a documentary crew, like they know how to be a fly on the wall. So I think it worked out great. You know, it was definitely more nuanced as we were doing it. There's a lot going on, but it was really cool. I think everyone worked together well.
So when we go to that episode 5 of It's All Country, will we see Luke Bryan? Will we see Peyton Manning in that studio session? Will they see them at your studio? What was their presence or lack thereof?
Well, Luke was at the studio for the tracking day with us, with the band. He was hanging out. He said it was weird for him because he's normally the artist on the session. So,
that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
He's probably wanting to get his hands dirty.
For sure.
Come on, let me be a part of this. I'll roll up my sleeves. I'll jump in there.
It was great having him there, though, because he was really thinking from the point of view of, like, we're so used to doing it that we forget some of the things that maybe need to be explained to someone who maybe doesn't do it every day. And so he was there and he was kind of asking a few questions along the way, like, so what does this mean? Like, I know you said you're going to do an overdub. What is overdub?
Yeah. Okay.
You know, like things like that. It was really great because he was thinking about the audience.
Yeah.
Like, who's going to be watching the show and what would be useful and helpful for them to help them understand what we're doing?
And Peyton Manning, was he around or no?
No, he was not there.
Okay. Well, as we start to wind things down, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you what it was like to perform the Star Spangled Banner with Mickey Guyton at the Super Bowl almost 3 years ago, how it felt to perform at that, as well as you're producing the arrangement for the song.
Yeah, that was an incredible experience. It was also hugely intimidating, to be honest, because, you know, Mickey got the call a couple months before the Super Bowl was about to happen. And so when they asked me to come up with the arrangement and stuff, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is such a meaningful thing. And this song means so much, but I grew up in Canada and I didn't grow up singing the American anthem. I grew up singing the Canadian anthem. So I had to learn it. And, you know, and I took it so seriously about just wanting to make sure that I could honor this anthem because I know it means so much to Americans. So I went back and I watched like a lot of the other performances that had happened, and so many incredible ones. And, you know, Mickey and I talked a lot about what she wanted the performance to feel like and look like and what her version of it should be. And then, you know, getting to go out and actually perform it on that field was just like, I've never performed for that many people.
Right. That's what I'm thinking. Oh, by the way, this is going to be in front of 70,000 people in Los Angeles, of all places. You're like, yeah, thanks. Thanks. I didn't need the added pressure.
It was incredible. I mean, you know, it's a bucket list thing. I never imagined that I would get the opportunity to do that in my life. And I know that, like, there's no way that'll ever happen again. So I'm just like, celebrating the fact that I got to do it.
No doubt. So cool. Audience, you heard Karen talk about Megan Patrick. We're going to close today with Whether You Love Me or Not, which is a Megan Patrick song that Karen produced and co-wrote. Before I let you go and we play that track, Karen, share with the audience first all about this song, if you would, please.
Well, this is one of my favorites on Megan's record. You know, Megan has gone through a lot to get to this point where she's making this record Golden Child, and it's a real personal journey for her. And this song, Whether You Love Me or Not, came out of her feeling like she wasn't getting the kind of love that she needed from someone in her life, someone who played a very meaningful role in her life. And she her reclaiming that and saying, you know, I'm going to love me whether you love me or not, you know? And it was just, it was such a powerful emotion that it made it easy to want to write about that. And I had this little guitar lick that I had started kind of figuring out the day before the session, knowing that Megan was going to come in. And I knew that she was really digging some stuff that had guitar licks that were kind of in a similar vein. So I was like, oh, it'd be really cool if I have this writing session with Megan tomorrow. And it would be really cool if I had some kind of little guitar line that I could play for her. Maybe she'll like it. Maybe we work it into a song or something. And she loved it. So it was our jumping off point musically. And she had the concept of what she wanted to say. And then the rest kind of came together.
So cool. So cool. Karen, this was awesome. I knew it was going to be. Thank you so much. It was great to meet you. And I really appreciate you making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment.
Thanks so much, Bruce. I really appreciate it. It's been really fun talking with you.
Awesome. Awesome. My pleasure. Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to multi-instrumentalist, producer, and multi-genre songwriter Karen Kozowski. Do visit her official website at karenkozowski.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. Remember to look at the bottom of her website for links that you will want to engage with. This morning, I followed Karen on Instagram, plus she is on Facebook too. Be sure to let her know that you heard her on Now Hear This Entertainment. As I mentioned before, at the bottom of karenkozowski.com, you will see links for Spotify and Apple Music. Those will take you to playlists containing songs that Karen has written and or produced. I do hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Karen and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, close to 11 years without missing once, by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 568. Thanks ever so much for listening. Happy New Year. I will send you out today with a song that Karen produced and co-wrote. This is the one she just talked about. It's the Megan Patrick song called Whether You Love Me or Not.
I quit looking in the mirror and seeing what you see. 'Cause there ain't nothing wrong with that girl staring back at me. She's funny as hell, smart as a whip, and she doesn't take anyone's shit. I see myself so different now, but I haven't changed a bit. 'Cause the sun still shines even though you left, and my heart's still beating there in my chest. Yeah, it hurt a lot, but I still laugh when I talk to God. He still talks back. I'm worth more than you ever thought, and I know now I'm better off. So I'm gonna love me whether you love me or not. I've learned to love the pieces that you wanted me to hide. I've never been good enough, yeah, it don't cross my mind. I don't feel ashamed, I know I ain't broken. I won't let you take what I know is golden. And I sleep easy knowing when I open up my eyes. I talk to you see.